We are coming to the end of the Democratic primaries. I applaud Senator Sanders and his supporters for challenging us. We are going to get unaccountable money out of politics. We are going to take on the crisis of income inequality. And we are going to unify the Democratic Party and stop Donald Trump.
This isn't over. So what exactly does that mean when I say this is not over? Clearly, Auntie Hillary's lead has become absolutely insurmountable. And part of the problem is these superdelegates. Now, so many of the Sanders folks are crying afoul right now. It's been stolen from us. Well, it hasn't. Stolen's kind of a strong word. I would prefer to use the word skewed. I would prefer to use the fact that there were some things put out there that weren't necessarily true. We'll get into that in just a minute. Hello, my name is Melvin. Welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 164. I appreciate all your support. Thank you for being here. One of the things that these superdelegates were good for was making people think that the race was over long before it was over. Now, the talking point that came out of the DNC was the superdelegates are only 15% of the total delegates. They're not going to make a big difference. The biggest difference is going to be made when people get out and vote. And that is by and large true. But here is one of the things that it is good for. When she is still more than 500 delegates away from clinching the nomination, they get to claim that she clinched the nomination. The pledged delegates are the only things that should count, and two things happen. The day before California, the AP called the Democratic race for Hillary Clinton. And the way they did so was the same way that they did so for Donald Trump. And it wasn't that Donald Trump won any particular state. There are groups of reporters. And the AP is definitely one of the best at this. And what they do is they get on the phone with these delegates and superdelegates, or what are referred to as unpledged delegates for the Republicans, and they call the hell out of them until they pledge for one person or the other. Now, one of the most important things in journalism is to make sure that you do not become part of the story. And in my opinion, especially the way AP makes money, because the AP is a newswire, and the way they make money now is not by getting eyeballs to the television and not by, you know, selling magazine subscriptions and things of that nature. The way they get people, the way they make their money from advertisers is with online clicks, and they need those clicks and they need some clickbait. But AP also has a name. When it comes to journalism, when it comes to putting out accurate information, I use AP for a lot of things. So they find a way to make news, even when there isn't any news. And they finally called enough delegates the day before California and got someone to say, yes, I'll support Hillary Clinton. And just like that, the race was over. And if that stinks to you, I'll tell you something. It stinks to me as well, and I'm certainly unhappy with the way things turned out. It is pretty likely that Hillary Clinton was going to get it no matter what, but this election has brought a lot of things to light, and it's made us realize, A, how little, not just us, folks who tend to vote Democratic, but it's also showed how little the Republican voters mean to the Republican Party. Yes, they would like it very much if you would get out and you would vote for these Republicans that they're putting out there. But if you could bugger off after that, if you could stop thinking that they really give a patootie about you, I mean, because they don't. We've known that this race was wrong for a long time. And we've known for a long time that this race was not going to favor those of us that are Sanders supporters. We've talked on this show about the Hillary Victory Fund. We've talked on this show about the problem with the superdelegates. And by the way, there's a lot of talk right now about how maybe the superdelegates will go for Hillary Clinton at the convention, because they'll realize that only Senator Sanders can beat Donald Trump. And although I agree with you that part B is true, part A, not so much. You got to understand something about a lot of those superdelegates. The Clintons are a machine. when Barack Obama became the Democratic nominee and he beat that machine in 2008, well, that just gave that machine 8 years to get stronger. And a part of that machine is the folks that the Clintons know, the associates that they've made over the years, and the people whose political careers they've helped. Do you think that those people who pledged to her, even before the race began, in Sanders' own numbers, 100, something in the number, 400 of them pledged to her before the race even began, do you really think they're going to flip to him no matter what the polls say? No. So, where are we at? What comes next? Prior to California, Senator Sanders came out for Debbie Wasserman Schultz's opponent. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, the head of the DNC, because he was incredibly upset about the way things have been run. And it's not just the superdelegates. Those aren't her fault. Those have been around for a while. But the debate scheduling and things of that nature, that definitely is her fault. And he decided to come out for the guy that's running against her in her district, Tim Canova.
You've been calling for a revolution in Florida. Are you with Wasserman Schultz, or are you with her opponent?
Well, clearly I favor her opponent. His views are much closer to mine than is Wasserman Schultz's. And let me also say this, in all due respect to the current chairperson, if elected president, she would not be reappointed to be chair of the DNC.
We are a little bit more than a month out from the Democratic convention right now. And I think it's going to be good watching. I think it's going to be good listening. I think that this particular show is going to get a ton of great sound bites out of it. I'm very excited for it, however it turns out. But in the interim, Bernie Sanders is already changing the Democratic Party. Now, we're sad. We're sad, of course. I have been on this microphone for Bernie Sanders for a long time. And I have said some disparaging words about Hillary Clinton, and I'm not taking any of them back. We have to recognize what we did, though, and we have to recognize how important it is. And we have to go forward and make sure that that work continues. So, Sanders is now backing Canova. And there are rumblings. It's a lot of rumors right now, but it's not coming from fake news sites. It's coming from legitimate ones, saying that Debbie Wasserman Schultz may be out before the convention. We're about 5-6 weeks away from the convention right now, and I think that that would be good for Democratic morale. That's one of the things that could help bring the Sanders people around. Another thing, Elizabeth Warren recently came out, and she waited until the whole race was done, which I respect, and she backed Clinton. By the way, she still has my full-throated support. I absolutely love Elizabeth Warren. She's done a ton of good things. And I'm not upset that she came out and endorsed the eventual Democratic nominee. Now, I'm not going to endorse the eventual Democratic nominee. She's going to get my vote. I'm not going to be coy about that. And not that my endorsement would mean anything anyway. Who the hell am I? I'm Melvin. Who cares? Sorry. So another thing that the Democratic Party decided to do was give Bernie seats on the platform, which I think is a very, very positive move. Normally, the way this goes is the DNC chair just simply picks all 15 chairs. And they said, no, what we'll do is Debbie Wasserman Schultz is going to get, or I think it's 15 or 16. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz is going to get the 5, and then Hillary Clinton's going to get 5 or 6. And then Bernie Sanders is going to get 5. And I was looking over the Sanders list, and this, a lot of people are very dismissive of the platform. But don't be, because it tells the rest of the country where we are. And if we really are going to change the Democratic Party, and that's the best way. I understand there's a lot of folks that are talking about going for the voting for Green and all the, you know, American Family Party and all these other things. No, that's great. Go do that. That's fine. Help build up those parties. But I myself recognize that there's already an infrastructure out there in place. And rather than trying to build an entire party from the ground up, which could take, I don't know, hundreds of years, because I don't have the resources to build it up. I guess in the internet age, it could take 50 years to make a brand new party that's as big as the Democratic or Republican parties. But what I've decided to do is infiltrate the Democratic Party, take that current infrastructure, get inside of there and change that party. Not move out there and create my own party, but to make that damn party be over here where I am and where that damn party should have been the entire time. So So the people that Sanders put on the panel, I love this. The American Institute president, James Zogby, a Palestinian rights activist. Keith Ellison, by the way, Representative Keith Ellison from Miami, who is a congressman and a Muslim and very progressive. If you have a chance to watch any of his YouTube videos, the guy is fantastic. Bill McKibben of 350.org. He is a staunch environmentalist. 350.org is also a fantastic website. Deborah Parker, Native American activist, and Cornel West, of course, philosopher, social activist, author. So Bernie is getting those things that he wants. And by the way, Bernie is still not out of the race yet.
I am pleased with the distribution. Secretary Clinton has six members on that committee. We have five, and the DNC will have four. And I think we're to make sure that the platform that leaves that drafting committee is the strongest platform that the Democrats, Democratic Party has ever seen in terms of representing the interests of working people.
All of these are important steps. And for those folks that just want to walk away from this whole process, that are upset by the whole thing, the way the whole thing worked, yes, I'm upset by the way that the whole thing worked as well. But I see it as important to stay engaged, not just in politics as a whole, but specifically with the Democratic Party, keeping inside the Democratic Party and making sure that my thoughts, that my issues are heard. I've played clips of Bob Ney on this program before. And the last time I played one, he said, look, Bernie Sanders isn't getting out. You can take that to the bank. Bernie Sanders is not getting out. And after the recent California loss, he decided to go on the air and reiterate that same thing again.
This is far from over between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, not two people personally, but between ideas and the progressive movement. People today, as I've been doing shows, some of the people, Tom, say, well, Bernie's done. Is he going to exit? No, he's not going to exit, which is something I have said for a couple of months now. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter after Washington, D.C., he will continue on until he gets assurances that aspects of his movement that he has, that he represents, that's swelled from the ground up with, the progressive movement.
It's hard to say what Sanders is going to do from here on out. By the time this show comes out, the D.C. primary will have already happened. And Sanders is still pledging to go all the way to the convention. So I don't know what the next chapter of this story is. I don't know how this story is going to go. But I am still very much with this candidate and not swinging towards the general election just yet. And as far as general election goes, general election mode for myself and for this show, I don't know how that's going to look either, because I'm still following what Bernie's doing.
The person the Republicans have nominated for president cannot do the job. Donald Trump's ideas aren't just different. They are dangerously incoherent. They're not even really ideas, just a series of bizarre rants, personal feuds, and outright lies. He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
Somebody has already swung towards the general election. Hillary Clinton gave what was billed as a foreign policy speech a number of weeks ago. And I thought that the speech was good. What I liked about it was I think we got a good picture of how she is going to run in the general. I made a lot of friends during this election, which is interesting because I know a lot more people that say that they lost friends during this election. But I made a lot of friends during this election. I had a Bernie rally at my house. I got into online forums. I made a lot of friends during this election. And I understand that there's a lot of folks that have great reasons why they would not vote for her. I have one friend who went to Iraq and he said he won't vote for her. You're damn right. I understand, and I would never ask you to do so. I have another friend who's absolutely never Hillary. And hey, I get his reasoning too. That's fine. I'm not asking anybody to vote for her. but I have decided that I'm not just going to lose everything. I'm not just going to turn tail. And I'm not simply going to turn this election over to the Donald. So I'm not going to make a case for her, but I want to say one of the reasons that the speech was so effective, and it wasn't so much what her foreign policy is going to be. And by the way, her foreign policy is what I have had a problem with in the past. So I thought it was interesting that the speech that she gave had to do with foreign policy. But what she did, instead of a lot of policy proposals, was she pointed out the things that we cannot lose by voting for Donald Trump. I would say to you, or to anybody, that if the way you make the case for your candidate is by making folks afraid of the other candidate, then your candidate has already lost. That's what you could say during a normal election year. But there are folks that say, you cannot vote for Hillary Clinton. She will be a disaster. Vote Trump. And then there's folks that say, you cannot vote for him because he... And by the way, he would be a disaster. So with that said, you can't have two losing candidates. One of these folks is going to go to the White House. But who? Barring some unforeseen disaster, I saw a headline on RT recently where Julian Assange from WikiLeaks said that they're going to release enough information. And by the way, RT is a legitimate site where they're going to release enough information so that Hillary gets indicted. I'm still skeptical. I don't think it's going to happen. And then, of course, inside of Republican donor circles, they're trying to find ways to get rid of Donald Trump before the convention comes up. So who knows what's going to happen in the next month? But in the present, where we are now, I thought Hillary's speech was effective because it used Donald's own words against him, which Donald should have been saying thank you for, but he wasn't.
He says he doesn't have to listen to our generals or admirals, our ambassadors and other high officials because he has, quote, a very good brain. He also said, I know more about ISIS than the generals do. Believe me. You know what? I don't believe him.
I know more about ISIS than the generals do. Believe me.
Who are you consulting with consistently so that you're ready on day one?
I'm speaking with myself, number one, because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
It's insane to me that anybody buys that's good reason. I'm speaking to myself, my own good brain. Yeah, I've said that I am going to get involved and stay involved in this election, including the presidential part of it. I'm not voting for a third party. I'm going to get involved and I'm going to stay involved. And with respect to the Democratic Party, I'm going to make that party move more to where I am, but not I alone. I do believe that there is a solid chance that she could lose to the Donald. And of course, my biggest problem with the Donald is how fast and loose he plays when it comes to war. There was a time where folks would be somewhat coy about it or say, we just gotta, for America's protection, for the American way. But he's not even, let's just bomb the SH out of them, he says.
This is a man who said that more countries should have nuclear weapons, including Saudi Arabia.
We're better off, frankly, if South Korea is going to start to protect itself.
Saudi Arabia nuclear weapons?
Saudi Arabia, absolutely.
He has said that he would order our military to carry out torture and the murder of civilians who are related to suspected terrorists, even though those are war crimes.
With the terrorists, you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families.
It's amazing to me that there is anybody who is out there for this guy. If you vote for I'm voting for the Republican nominee because, I don't like Hillary Clinton. Well, have you looked at the Republican nominee? And I suppose one could say, if you looked at the Democratic nominee, it's weird that the two folks with the highest negative ratings got the nominations. But such is the screwed up state of our parties right now. So Hillary goes on during her foreign policy speech.
We all know the tools Donald Trump brings to the table: bragging, mocking, composing nasty tweets. I'm willing to bet he's writing a few right now.
And as a matter of fact, at that moment, Donald Trump was indeed writing nasty tweets about Hillary Clinton. One of the most important things I think that she did, using his own words against him, that's very good and that's very effective. If you can make it work, she wasn't taking him out of character, you know, she wasn't making things up, or she, wacky Donald, you know, she was using his own incredibly poisonous, childish words against him. And that's great. That's a very effective way to keep fighting. And I hope she continues to fight that way. One of the more important things that she did during that speech was she talked about the Bin Laden raid. And I thought that this was very important, very telling. And she talked about how tense it was and how they worked to make sure that there were, you know, no innocent people were killed. Now, I understand. I'm going to get some mail. What about the drone strike? Nobody likes the freaking drone strikes. We like any of this stuff. Any of these damn wars we have going on. Pointless. Costly. Killing people. I don't particularly care for any of it. But there's no easy way out. These wars are incredibly easy to start. Drop a bomb, a million people hate you, you have a war. How the hell do you get out of that? How the hell do you rebuild? That's the impossible part to know. But while we are still engaged in these overseas conflicts, it's very important that we do so with forethought and considering the consequences. And not just marching in and getting as many people killed as possible.
During the raid to kill Bin Laden, when every second counted, our SEALs took the time to move the women and children in the compound to safety. Donald Trump may not get it, but that's what honor looks like. I remember being in the Situation Room with President Obama debating the potential Bin Laden operation. The president's advisors were divided. The intelligence was compelling, but far from definitive. And the risks of failure were daunting. The stakes were significant for our battle against Al-Qaeda and our relationship with Pakistan. Most of all, the lives of those brave SEALs and helicopter pilots hung in the balance. It was a decision only a president could make. And when he did, it was as crisp and courageous a display of leadership as I've ever seen. Now imagine Donald Trump sitting in the Situation Room, making life or death decisions on behalf of the United States. Imagine him deciding whether to send your spouses or children into battle. Imagine if he had not just his Twitter account at his disposal when he's angry, but America's entire arsenal. Do we want him making those calls? Someone thin-skinned and quick to anger who lashes out at the smallest criticism. Do we want his finger anywhere near the button? There's no risk of people losing their lives if you blow up a golf course deal. But it doesn't work like that in world affairs. Just like being interviewed on the same episode of 60 Minutes as Putin was, is not the same thing as actually dealing with Putin. So the stakes in global statecraft are infinitely higher and more complex than in the world of luxury hotels.
It's weird to think about the absolute love fest that's going on between Hillary and Barack right now. Back in 2008, roughly around this time, Hillary Clinton was writing letters to the superdelegates asking if they would go for her instead, because there's no way, according to the polls, President Obama can win the upcoming election. It was her making that case to the superdelegates back then, and she wasn't as far behind as Bernie is behind right now. And when you see them in public, it's like they've been the best of friends forever, even though they said incredibly toxic things about each other way back when. I do hope that Hillary and Bernie can get to that point eventually as well. Not because Bernie decided to become more like Hillary, but because Hillary decided to become more like Bernie.
This is not someone who should ever have the nuclear codes, because it's not hard to imagine Donald Trump leading us into a war just because somebody got under his very thin skin.
One of the things Donald Trump is good at, and I don't mean good as in he's good, but he's consistent at, we'll go with that word instead, is counterpunching. Someone says something, he hits right back. Someone says something, he hits right back. So Hillary Clinton just did an entire foreign policy speech, using your own words against you, which, by the way, you should not hate, Mr. Trump. You should love that. Those are your freaking words. Someone uses my words, not going to hate it. It doesn't make any sense. I don't say anything I'm embarrassed of. But Donald, hearing his own words said by somebody as high profile as Hillary Clinton, somebody with some dignity, and it got to him. And he decided if she's going to use his own words to show what an embarrassment he is, well, this is the point at which Donald Trump hits back.
Lion Hillary, that lion. She is a liar. No. Ted Cruz is no longer a liar. We don't say Lion Ted anymore. We love Ted. We love Ted, right? We love Ted. Now, we don't want to say Lion Ted. I'd love to pull it out and just use it on Lion Crooked Hillary. Love to say. Because she is a liar. She made up my foreign policy. Donald Trump is going to do this. I said, I never said that.
That's what he's got. That's everything. That's his whole response. Liar, liar, liar. Your pants, they are on fire. Look it, I got your nose. There's his entire response. He's got nothing. And that's good. One of the biggest BS things, and I say this not in defense of Clinton, but I've pointed out on this show the dozens of consulates and embassies that were attacked when Bush was president. And over 60 people got killed in those attacks. Never were they politicized. Never, ever. But it happens when Obama's president and Clinton is Secretary of State. And it is the biggest story ever. 24 hours a day. All her fault. Damn you, Hillary, you got 4 people killed. Well, we got 1 million people killed in the Iraq war. Damn you, Hillary, you got 4 people killed. But we know that the Benghazi story, at least the version of the Benghazi story that conservatives tell, is crap. And why do we know that? Well, one, conservatives are telling it. Two, it's been 24 hours a day. It was 24 hours a day for them for some time. And it was so sweet to see them called out on their own network by one of their own journalists. And I use the term loosely, of course.
This administration was slandered by the coverage of the Benghazi event. We promulgated to the world the false notion that the Obama administration had the military capacity save those people.
Oh, really? We didn't
we
have planes in Sinkanella?
We couldn't
day. Get planes day after for day. 13
We have
hours?
Never apologized for that.
We should apologize.
We have never apologized for slandering good people
one at a time.
That you may politically disagree with.
All right.
By saying they could have saved people, we basically accused them of murdering our own people.
There was a stand down in Tripoli.
There was a stand down below.
Let me tell you something. You don't sit on a roof for 8 hours.
Okay. Still not apologize.
That was Geraldo Rivera on the Fox News channel. And you heard everybody, no, losing their minds. And it's a right-wing talking point. And they got called out on their own network with this right-wing talking point. Here's another thing that has become more a right-wing talking point than just a story. And that is the emails. Bernie pointed out during one of the debates, I don't care about your damn emails. Look, there's an investigation going on. But once again, it's the Obama administration investigating one of their own. I'm not going to pretend that that's a full investigation. Just like I wouldn't pretend that it was a full investigation if, say, the Bush administration was investigating itself. That's not the way these things go. And I don't think, and perhaps something illegal did happen. But the coverage of it, the way that it's been framed, and the way that folks have been hoping that she gets indicted is a little bit insane to me. If she broke the law, then yes, I would like to see something happen. But this is the Obama FBI, the Obama Justice Department, the administration. These are their folks. Obama picks the Department of State. Obama picks the head of the FBI. This is one of the things that you get to do as president. Do you really think something is going to come out of this? And it's not as though she's the first person to use a private server. And Geraldo decided in that same segment to also take on the email scandal that was 24/7 on Fox as well.
All days, a federal judge says you've got to have all of those emails by February 29th or whatever it is. Nobody talks about
it. How did they not ask about that?
The most overrated scandal we have ever covered. There is absolutely no crime. You get your
Geraldo, hopes up. Setting
you get,
up the
you
server
get your
was
hopes
crime.
Up on this email scandalette.
No one's
hoping. And by,
no
by one's getting your hopes up that there'll be an indictment, you lose sight of the real issue.
So I'm calling it a right-wing talking point because in right-wing circles, if you say Benghazi or you say emails, even if you just don't even have to say Hillary's emails, you say emails, people hear Hillary's emails, and that's the way things run in right-wing circles. And one of the most heartbreaking things, one of the most disappointing things I have seen at this point in the election since Bernie did not clinch the nomination was I've seen Bernie folks sharing those right-wing talking points. I haven't so much seen the Benghazi thing being shared by Sanders supporters who were disappointed by the Sanders loss, but I have seen a lot of folks sharing the email thing, which, by the way, at this point is a right-wing talking point. Perhaps something could come out of it, but for reasons I've laid out already, it's really not likely. But the reason so many folks are hoping for this. Bernie folks are hoping for this because they believe that if Hillary gets indicted, she won't make it to the convention. And Bernie, having the second most amount of delegates, and he could be pushed over the edge by the supers, that the nomination would just go to him. And chances are, yes, that would happen. But right-wingers would also like Hillary Clinton to be indicted. And it's not just because they hate her. It's what an indictment would do, not just to Hillary Clinton, but what an indictment would do to the Democratic Party. The largest voting bloc in America right now is not Democrats, is not Republicans. It's none of the above. It's unaffiliated. It's independents. And what they do is Yes, they watch what the individual candidates do, but they also watch what the parties do. Now, I think, in my mind right now, the Republican Party looks a lot worse because Donald is saying insane, racist things, and they're just getting behind him. Hey, that's our nominee. Wah, wah, wah. But if Hillary Clinton is indeed indicted, I don't think Democrats would turn against her. And of course, Republicans are already against her. But those people that you need to win, who are in the middle, folks who would normally side with Sanders, because Sanders is where America is on the issues. The indictment of Hillary Clinton would not fare well for Sanders if he became the nominee by default, rather than by indirect election. And yes, you can bark and scream all you want about stolen and rigged elections. And yeah, the Bernie people were treated unfairly in this election. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz herself said that the entire point of the superdelegate process is to make sure that grassroots candidates do not get the nomination. But in my mind, what we should want to do at this point is change that for the future. It's not going to change this year. Get on these damn parties now, both the Democratic and Republican parties. Get on them now. Just have primaries, have them be open so that you can get those unaffiliated people, so that you can get those people in the middle, those people that you need in the general election. It's nice to know you're going to get all your Democrats in the election, but it's better to know that you're going to get everybody in the election. And if I could request this to my fellow Bernie supporters, who I love you all no matter what, no matter where you're at on this, please stop sharing in words and online this right-wing talking point. If something comes out of it, fine. Let the chips fall where they may and let Hillary face the consequences. But up until then, it's nothing more than hysteria and a right-wing talking point. And if you don't want Donald Trump to win in the fall, then you should not be wishing for an indictment. If you want Donald Trump to win in the fall, or if you do not care, then you go ahead and you continue wishing. But an indictment would not just be bad for Hillary Clinton. It would be bad for the Democratic Party. And that's the ticket that Bernie Sanders ran for. And that's the top of the ticket where he would wind up. And that indictment would not fare well for him in the general either.
She stonewalled the IG, and now everybody's taking the fifth. I mean, we haven't been able to get the truth.
You
couldn't get the truth
out
of Hillary if you waterboarded her.
What?
You couldn't get the truth out of her with a waterboard.
That was Barry Bennett, somebody who is with Donald Trump in this particular campaign. And by the way, somebody who also very much loves torture. You couldn't get the truth out of her if you wanted. Waterboarding's got to be the grossest thing. I can't believe that we do that. I can't believe there are folks that defend that. And I understand that even with my impassioned plea, there's still going to be a lot of people with their arms crossed and are disappointed. And that's fine. Our wounds are still very fresh right now. And it sucks to have to admit that this is the point that we're at. But I, for one, am not defeated. I'm not going to let it take me down. I'm not going to get discouraged. I still have a hell of a lot of fight in me, hell of a lot of hope, and I'm going to make something happen.
Oh, so Bernie, where's Bernie's supporters going to go? We have a pretty good indication a lot of them may go to Trump. They're so angry at being betrayed and having this election stolen from them in a rigged system. I don't blame, if I'm a Bernie supporter, I'm pissed off. I would never vote for Hillary.
That's Sean Hannity, noted Democrat, no, hardcore Republican. I wrote a song 11 years ago with a punk band I was in called Two Word Culture, and I mentioned this. It's on my mind now because the band is getting back together. It may be for a couple days, a week, whatever. I don't know. I'm just glad to be jamming with these guys again. And I remember writing that song, and in the hook of the song, I made a Hitler reference. I wasn't comparing anybody to Hitler, but what I wanted to say was I noticed that when I listened to the Sean Hannity show, and I used to listen for 3 hours a day, I noticed when I listened to the Sean Hannity show that there is nobody on the Republican side that he would go after. And then everybody on the Democratic side, no matter who they are, he went after them with the heat of a thousand suns. And I go, huh, how is that possible? Because even I'm not that way. There are Republicans that I sometimes side with some of their issues, and there are Democrats where I go after tooth and nail. I'm firmly on the left side of the spectrum, but I'm not so firm that I defend criminal Democrats. Edwards, John Edwards, what you did was crooked. What you did was nasty. You a criminal. Care if you're a Democrat. And I used to be one of your biggest fans. What you did was nasty. See that? I just did it. Just like that. Yeah, that's being independent, you heard? But in the song, I said, Hitler could have used you, Sean. If you were there, he'd still be strong. And what I was trying to say was not necessarily that Sean was a white supremacist. But on the political spectrum, I was trying to say there's nobody that's too far to the right for you that you will not defend. And the way lyrics work and syllables work, it was easier to say Hitler than it was white supremacist. See, it just throws the whole sentence off. And here we are, all these years later, and I still listen to the Sean Hannity show. I only listen to the first hour, though. I don't listen to hours 2 and 3 because he just repeats himself. But when I listen, he defends Donald Trump no matter what horrible thing he says. And my mind goes back to this song and I go, whoa, you're defending a white supremacist. You're defending a white nationalist. Holy hell. My song is happening. My song is coming true. What I said. And as good as it feels to be right, let me just say, Sean is still evil. But Sean very much feels your pain right now, Bernie supporters who feel left out in the cold. And Sean, now that clip I just played, that's one day. And Sean has been doing this every day. And then he goes on the air the next day. I won't play every day, but I will play just two consecutive days where he went on the air and stood up for you Bernie supporters who are saying never Hillary.
If I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, I'm saying no way am I ever voting for Hillary Clinton. Not in a million years am I voting for Hillary Clinton because I got ripped off. The system's rigged and they stole the nomination and the fix was in from the get-go. I wouldn't vote for her. They'll either stay home or they can go vote for Trump.
By the way, Hannity is not your friend because in those exact same segments, day after day, he will describe Bernie Sanders like this.
A 74-year-old angry, bitter, disheveled, curmudgeon, socialist from Vermont.
Cute, right? And about a month or so ago, maybe a month and a half ago, Bernie Sanders was giving a speech. And Sean had on one of his Let's Make Verbal Love to Republicans panels. And Bernie was speaking. And rather than go to the speech, Sean said this.
Let me go to Tucker. But by the way, Bernie Sanders is speaking. It's streaming live right now at foxnews.com. But I wouldn't waste your time. Sorry. Just my humble opinion.
You have to wonder when the things that you say overlap with the things that, say, Sean Hannity says. Someone as awful as Sean Hannity, you have to wonder why. You have to wonder where those things are coming from inside of you. And you need to re-examine yourself. Now, it's time that we assess our wounds. It sucks that we lost. At least at this point. It's been a hell of an election. Who knows what's going to happen next? But let me just say this. When you lost, I lost as well.
I wanted to follow up on something you were talking about, the single payer, referred to single payer healthcare, talking about some of the European systems. You know, a common complaint in those European systems has to do with wait times for treatment, wait times for seeing specialists. How do you propose in your Medicare for All system to not have Americans have to deal with rationing of care?
Chuck,
I mean, this is a common, that's what I say, a common critique in Canada and the UK in particular.
Whoa. But let me answer your question. You know, the insurance companies and the drug companies and their mouthpieces, they go around and telling us how terrible healthcare is all over the world. All these terrible waiting lines. And yet when they do international studies and they ask people how they think and how they feel about the healthcare system, you know what? The United States is often down below. Many of these countries are much higher levels. We are the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't guarantee health care to all people. I've been criticized for saying that. Let me say it again. I believe health care is a right of all people. I will fight for a Medicare for all single-payer system. Second of all right, you want to talk about rationing? You got 29 million people in this country who have no health insurance. How's that for rationing? They can't go to the doctor. And then you got even more who are underinsured with high deductibles and high copayments. I have talked to doctors who have told me that people walk in the door extremely sick. And the doctors say, why didn't you come in here 6 months ago when you first felt your symptoms? And people said, I had no health insurance or I had a high deductible. Chuck, some of those people die or they end up in the hospital. You want to talk about rationing? That's rationing. To answer your question, we spend almost three times more per person than the people in the UK, 50% more than the people in France. We can have a world-class healthcare system without waiting lines, spending the same amount of money we're spending right now.
I've mentioned not just to people that I know, but on this particular microphone, that war is my issue. And yeah, that is the one that is at the top of my list. And it sat there all by its lonely for many, many, many years. There is another issue which sits right next to it and is about to take it over. And that is the issue of healthcare and access to healthcare and the way that we do healthcare in this particular country. Now, what I've been struck with is not something like, say, cancer. And for that, I'm thankful. It's a weird thing to say, but I am. But what I have been hit with, I don't know what it is. I have these terrible headaches, which, by the way, as of recently, have started ramping up again. And I'm not able to get relief from them. I have found something that works. I have tried marijuana, a high CBD marijuana, and it does the job, but I'm a driver. I get random drug tests, and it's not a risk that I can take as long as I'm in this particular occupation. But what I would like to do is find out exactly what's ailing me, what's causing terrible, terrible pressure inside my brain. And by the way, the closer a pain gets to your face, the scarier it is, and the more it hurts, no matter what the realities of the pain are. But Melvin, just go out and get health insurance. Go get you some of that Obamacare. By the way, I have that. And I still stand behind and support Obamacare because it did expand access to healthcare. And I do have friends that have never had healthcare before that have healthcare now because of Obamacare. But wait, Obamacare still left the private for-profit insurance companies in charge. So this means all of the tests that I have had to get done, when my doctor decides to send me in for a test, I end up with a gigantic bill. And yes, the insurance picked up some of that bill, but they left me with a whole freaking lot of it. And I call and I fight them. So I'm $300, $400, $500 a test. And that's after the insurance company pays their portion of it. And all of the tests up to this point have turned up absolutely nothing. So what I've decided to do is stop going. Stop getting tested, which is frightening. Because I don't know what it is. I don't know how dangerous it is. I don't know if it's going to kill me. I don't know. But I'm at a point where I can't afford. I'm just working to pay for tests that are telling me nothing. If we had a more comprehensive health system, I might be able to continue with these tests. And they would come at a lower cost because we had a better system. When we pay the prices that we pay right now, we pay the prices we pay to cover A, for overhead for these private health insurance companies, and B, we already pay for the people who cannot afford their health care. But Melvin, we can't have universal health care. We can't expand Medicaid. What about rationing?
If, for example, there are systems, you're right, where if you needed a knee replacement or something like that, you might have to wait for that. But when you're sick, you go into the doctor when you need to go. My point is, Chuck, there is massive rationing in America. It is rationing based on money. If you don't have money and you don't have insurance and you don't have, you have a high deductible and you don't go to the doctor when you should, one out of five Americans today cannot afford the prescription drugs their doctors write. What do you define that as? Other countries around the world make sure that the people have the medicine they need. When one out of five people can't afford those prescriptions, man, I call that rationing. We can do a lot better than we're currently doing.
All right. This American right here cannot afford his medical tests. This American right here cannot afford to go into another MRI machine, get shot up with another thing. This American right here is already experiencing the rationing in our care. And I have health insurance. We can't have it. I don't want to pay for your health care, Melvin. I don't want to pay for you to get better. You're not paying for me to get better. What we're doing is we're finding a better system. A system that we are all involved in that will deliver better care to all of us. And I don't know what's wrong with me. And I'm probably not going to find out what's wrong with me. And I'm going to go ahead and just donate my body and my brain after I die. Easy now. Easy. It's going to be creepy as hell someone listens to this after I die. After I pass, take this freaking head off my shoulders, cut it into little pieces, and figure out what the hell was ailing me while I was here. Then when somebody comes in again and you run the same asinine tests on them that turn up absolutely nothing, but they still complain of headaches, you can say, ah, we've done some research on this. There was a gentleman a while ago. Call them Melvin headaches. I don't care what you call them. Just figure out what it is. Put it in your medical books and fix it the next time it comes up. I shouldn't have to make a statement like that. But I live in America. And in America, it's more important for our doctors, not our doctors, and our hospitals and our health insurance to make money than it is important for our people to get better and live full lives.
Every other major country on earth manages to guarantee health care to all of their people, spending significantly less per capita than we can. I live 50 miles away from Canada, you know? It's not some kind of communist authoritarian country. They're doing okay. They got a health care system that guarantees health care to all people. We can do the same.
Here's something I don't know is doing this show, and I want to go out with this to some degree, but there was a remix I found, and I've had a ton of fun with the Bernie campaign. I understand it's likely not over yet, because Bernie's going to go all the way to the convention at the very least, but it's been fun being a part of this campaign. It's been fun to be able to dream. It's been fun to think that what we can do as people going forward. It's been great, and I went ahead and I pulled this song off the interwebs. And I don't think I got to get clearance for it or anything. And if I do, who effing cares, ladies and gentlemen? Burn it up.
Burn it up. Come together for the middle class, for the young unemployed. Yo, corporate America destroyed this country. The wealthy have grown while children go hungry. Today we say, raise minimum wage. We have the guts to take this campaign. This great nation belongs to us. And let me tell you something.
Enough is enough.
Burn it up, come together for the middle class, for the young unemployed. Turn it up, come together.
Come on!
Yo, bring the noise.
Banks,
how can you go? CEOs, the wealthy have grown. Read, how can you go? The rich, 1%.
I oppose.
And the cocktail parties are not new America.
We have an agenda to bring people together.
The millionaires.
Millionaires.
The top 1%.
We've got a
national debt.
Whoa! Here we go again. Burn it up. Come together for the middle class, for the young unemployed. Turn it up.
Oh my goodness.
Yo, bring the noise.
Produced in China, doesn't matter to you. Offshore industry jobs, doesn't matter to you.
Do
billionaire tax breaks matter to you?
Income inequality, the great moral issue.
The country club's way out of touch.
Let me tell you something.
Enough is enough.
Burn it up. Come together for the middle class, for the young unemployed. Turn it up.
Come on.
Yo. Boys, that is what this campaign is about.
Remember, we don't just complain about these things. We have to do something about them. I hope that everybody continues to stay engaged to a significant degree. I hope you get involved with your local Democratic Party. I hope you get involved with your local Green Party, whatever floats your boat. Because it's only democracy. It's only getting out there, talking to people, being a part of the process. It's not enough to just take your ball and go home or piss and moan that you didn't get what you wanted. You have to get out there and fight for it. And you should do a lot of things like this, but at the very, very freaking least, you need to vote.
Passion is vital, but you got to have a strategy. And your plan better include voting. Not just some of the time, but all of the time. It is absolutely true that 50 years after the Voting Rights Act, there are still too many barriers in this country to vote. There are too many people trying to erect new barriers to voting. This is the only advanced democracy on earth that goes out of its way to make it difficult for people to vote. And there's a reason for that. There's a legacy to that. But let me say this. Even if we dismantled every barrier to voting, that alone would not change the fact that America has some of the lowest voting rates in the free world. In 2014, only 36% of Americans turned out to vote in the midterms. Second lowest participation rate on record. Youth turnout, that would be you, was less than 20%. Less than 20%. 4 out of 5 did not vote. In 2012, nearly 2 in 3 Americans, African Americans, turned out. And then in 2014, only 2 in 5 turned out. You don't think that made a difference in terms of the Congress I've got to deal with? And then people are wondering, well how come Obama hadn't gotten this done? How come he didn't get that done? You don't think that made a difference? What would have happened if you had turned out at 50, 60, 70% all across this country? People try to make this political thing really complicated. They're like, well, what kinds of reforms do we need? And how do we need to do that? And what? You know what? Just vote. It's math. If you have more votes than the other guy, you get to do what you want.
And I'm not suggesting the blind support of a party, any party. Before we support the Democratic Party, we need to make sure that they move towards populism and away from control by the financial elite. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. You can also find us on Kiwi Station. Like us at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. You can also find us on Podbean and at Kiwi Station. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. My name is Melvin, if you want to write to me directly. Hello. We work hard to not only inform, but to entertain, and also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us, and as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.